Well, hello, podcast listener. Welcome to this magnificent podcast that we call Mountain Meister. I am your host, Ben Schenk. Today, we bring in one of the best ultramarathoners in the world. Her name is Darcy PQ. Now, what does it take to be the best? Maybe you have to start from a young age?
No, I didn't really start running until after college.
Maybe you have to train relentlessly, like it's a full-time job. Now, is this your full-time job?
No, not at all.
It's some people's full-time job. But if it's not those things, how did Darcy become the best? Only one way to find out. Welcome to Mountain Meister.
Who are the Mountain Meisters?
Committing to the goal and galvanizing you and your team behind that one single focus.
Being at peace with that fear and being okay with it.
You gain a real appreciation for your life and for what you have.
Learn about their extreme lives on Rock, Snow, and Ice with your host, Ben Schenk.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Mountain Meister. Today on the show, we welcome Darcy PQ. Darcy, hi. How are you?
Hi, good. I'm well. How are you?
Good. I am great. Welcome to Mountain Meister. For the Meister fans who don't know Darcy, she is a professional ultra marathoner and one of the best females in the world. She's placed first 3 times in a row at Hard Rock 100, which, as I've said before, is probably the most miserable thing you could put your body through. We'll talk a little bit about Hard Rock today with Darcy. It's a 100-mile race through the Colorado San Juan Mountains. Covers a vertical climb more than the elevation of Mount Everest. And then, of course, you have to go back down the vertical of Mount Everest, which begs the question, why would anybody want to do this? And we'll talk about that today. First of all, Darcy, I read that you did not start running at a young age, did you?
No, I didn't. And thank you for having me. No, I didn't really start running until after college.
That's
odd. Which would be about 1997, 98.
Why? I mean, how did you even get into running?
Well, I think it was probably my junior year in college. I think I was traveling abroad. I was living, I spent a year in New Zealand and Australia. Mm-hmm. 6 months in each country. And I was just sort of hit me that I probably needed to start taking care of myself a little bit better, mm-hmm. I guess. And so I started running very recreationally as a way to somewhat stay in shape. And also, as I was traveling, was realizing that it was a really amazing way to see these beautiful countries that I was, at the time, living in.
Yeah, it's a great way to see. I'm actually starting to train for an not an ultra marathon. Wow, no, a marathon now. I'm training for New York City on November 2nd.
Oh, great.
Yes, and it is a fantastic way to see. I just moved to a new city, so I'm exploring around by running.
Mm-hmm. It is amazing. I did a lot of traveling during and after college on my own, and it was just such an amazing way. You wake up in a city that you don't know, and it allowed me at least to see different things that I probably would never see in a car, mm-hmm. or on a bike, for that matter. So it was a really interesting way to explore new places.
Except for the fact that you're running 100 miles now, which means that you could loop around the cities multiple times. How did this transform into mm-hmm. something so absurd?
Well, I basically started to... I graduated college. I moved to Breckenridge, Colorado. I kind of did the ski bum, ski instructor thing for 2 seasons. And while I was living there, I started to run in the mountains, basically, on top of doing skiing in the wintertime. And then after that, I ended up working for the Colorado Upward Bound School. Mm-hmm. And I worked for them on and off for about 5 years, 5 summers in a row, and was lugging around big packs and going very slowly through the mountains, and then realized that, well, if you take off all that weight, you can actually, and put on your tennis shoes, you can actually cover a lot more ground in the mountains by running with very minimal weight. And so I think that really, part of it was just, I knew that being in the mountains and being in nature, Upward Bound definitely opened my eyes to that love of mine. So I was just really, I was really at home in the mountains, and then just slowly started to discover that, that I could run through the mountains, and you know, similar to traveling through new cities, I could explore the backcountry in a whole new way, and that was a lot quicker than carrying a lot of gear and a lot of weight.
And also explore yourself probably a little bit more.
That's right, yeah.
Now, is this your full-time job?
No, not at all.
It's some people's full-time job, right?
It is some people's full-time job. I think it's, for me, no, after Breckenridge, I actually moved to Boulder, Colorado, and received my master's degree in counseling psychology. So now I work in a high school in Boulder doing intervention prevention work with high school students and families. So I do that, and then I also have sponsorship, and I also do some coaching on the side as well.
Okay, interesting. Does a psychology background help with your races? I'd imagine it does.
I'm not sure how much it helps. I mean, I think that having an awareness of how your mind can really play into a race in particular is really important. I think it's a really important thing to note, and it's an important thing that I think as athletes to not only train your body, but I always say it's really important to train your mind as well, which for me means time to meditate and to really learn different ways to sort of let go of some of the thoughts that can creep in. And I think that's really helpful, especially during a really, really long race where lots of negative thoughts can creep in and somewhat make you want to stop running at any point in time. So
let's move on to the Hard Rock 100. For our listeners, we had Garrett Grobbins on the show, episode number 32. And Darcy, I believe you know Garrett, don't you?
Yeah, I've known Garrett for many years.
Did you guys ever do some running together?
Yeah, we have over the years.
Just go on a quick 50-miler together, no big deal.
Right, exactly.
So that was episode number 32 for our listeners. He talked about Hard Rock in that episode as well, but it's such an interesting topic, so we're going to talk to Darcy about it too. When you start this race, Darcy, what's going through your mind? What are your priorities?
I think for me, I always have a goal of trying to really have a good time out there. Hmm. To like I said, to keep a positive mindset, try and keep a smile on my face, and to really enjoy the mountains. The San Juan Mountains are unbelievably beautiful, and it's a very special place for me. I used to instruct courses in that area, and so I think it's just, you know, constantly reminding yourself that you are in a beautiful place, you're really lucky to be here, those kinds of things. So that's sort of what I'm thinking about. And then in that race in particular, it really draws a special community together. It's an amazing group of people, which is part of the reason I keep going back to it. And I think that that's the other piece, is that you're interacting and you're catching up with old friends and you know, that have almost become family over the years.
Part of the people, some of the people that are there are your pacers. And the relationship with a pacer I find is really, really interesting. For our listeners who don't know, a pacer is, you guessed it, somebody that's pacing you throughout the course. But since it's 100 miles long, you need a few different pacers. How many pacers do you have on the course, Darcy? And do they start with you right at the beginning, or is this something that enters later on?
No, in general, in a 100-mile event, the pacer will start at mile 50. At Hard Rock, they actually can start at mile 40 because it is a lot longer, and it's just the nature of the terrain is so intense that it takes a lot longer. So They allow them at mile 40. I generally don't take one until mile 60. And I've done it, I think most years I've done it with two different pacers. So someone will run for 20 miles and then the other one will run for 20 miles, for example.
Why do you start with a pacer at 60 rather than 40?
I haven't always used pacers in the past.
On 100-mile races, you wouldn't use a pacer?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I've done several without pacers, and sometimes I end up having a better race.
Huh.
For some people, they really want that social interaction, and they really feel that they need that sort of morale boost. And I do think that it can be really helpful. I think, in particular, at a race like Hard Rock, it's very helpful to have someone who also has an extra set of headlights. So for the nighttime, generally that's a big piece for me, is to have another person at Hard Rock for the night section.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is so technical, and because, when it's very dark out there, and, this year in particular, there was lightning storms, and it probably wasn't the most, it was pretty dangerous this year at times.
Yeah.
Going up peaks in a lightning storm and things like that. So to have someone else there with you, felt a little bit safer, even though that's probably not the case. But
most organized sporting events don't allow you to compete during lightning storms when you're at sea level, let alone when you're at 14,000 feet on the mm-hmm. mountain.
It's a mountain race. So, there was a point where before starting up a 14,000 foot peak, the race director actually said it was pouring rain. It was, the storm had come in. It was lightning, thunder. And he said, I think it might be a good idea to wait out the storm. And I kind of, having known the mountains enough to know that the storm wasn't going to pass anytime soon, I just made the decision that I was going to start going up. I was going to start climbing again. And
straight into the lightning.
Straight into the lightning storm. So I knew it was going to take a while to get to the peak, and so, obviously the most dangerous spot would be on the summit.
Would your pacer have any hesitation to head into the lightning storm with you? Would that ever be a problem?
He didn't. I mean, at the time, he just came right along, and fortunately, I had a friend who went with me. He just finished his name's Gavin McKenzie, and he just finished an amazing feat summiting 14-14ers. So he's very experienced in the mountains, and he seemed to me pretty comfortable continuing on with me. And I know I wasn't alone. I knew that there was other runners out there. So there was a group, though, however, in front of us who had stopped. They had found a random person in a tent, and they had taken shelter for a bit in the tent.
I think what I find so cool about this pacer relationship is that it turns the individual sport of running an ultra marathon into a team sport,
mm-hmm.
which is interesting because you're at your lowest lows probably at some mm-hmm. points during mm-hmm. these races, just emotionally completely torn apart. And then you have to deal with somebody else as a teammate, which could be good or could be bad. Do you consider yourself a team player?
I think that the cool thing in this sport is that, yes, having a pacer and having someone that sees you at your lowest of lows really forms this bond that you sometimes don't often have with friends. And I think that's part of what links this community together, is that, we will sort of share in that, and, someone will come pace me, and then I'll come and try and pace them at a race, and you provide that type of camaraderie. It's different, obviously, than a team sport, but we can give back to one another at different points in time. And the bond that you form with runners out on the course is just, it's unlike any other sport that I've really come across, because you really are stripped of, as you're running, you're just stripped of everything. The ego and everything is just stripped away, and you're in these moments where you're just totally raw, and I think it's amazing how it can bond you to friends.
I've heard that most of the dropouts from Hard Rock 100 are mental, are because people can't take it mentally. Mm-hmm. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I would agree with that for most, quite honestly. Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that there, you know, there are people out there who have to stop for physical reasons. So I don't necessarily know the statistics, but there is, without a doubt, in 100 miles, there is suffering involved. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's whether or not you can navigate through that suffering and come out of it.
I'm going to give you a statistic, which I calculated, which I think proves that this race is mostly mental. So your margin of victory for the 2014 Hard Rock 100 was about 8 hours. You were 8 hours ahead of second place.
Mm-hmm.
That means that you are about 20% faster, which is huge. That's an incredible margin for a professional sport like this. Usain Bolt mm-hmm. was 1.23% faster during his gold medal performance in the 2012 Olympics. In bobsled and ski racing, we're talking fractions of a percentage. And this is right, on a, this right. is on a percentage, so it's adjusted for the time. Even sports that take longer, like NASCAR or even road marathons, the margin of victory is way less than 20%. So mm-hmm. I think that alone proves that it's got to be some sort of mental component.
Yeah. I think if you have over 100 miles over that great a distance, you have so many elements and so many factors that can play in mm-hmm. or that do play in to how fast or slow you're going. And how often you stop, and so many different things that play in a 100-mile race. And the truth is, for Hard Rock, I mean, you can also look at the numbers of women that have gotten in, because it is a lottery system. You know, the truth is that the competition has not been probably at the caliber that it,
right.
it that it has the potential to be at. So yeah, I mean, there's that factor too. There's mm-hmm. no doubt about it, because I know that there are women who want to get in, or who have tried to get in, who haven't gotten in through the lottery, that would make it much more competitive and would probably reduce that time significantly, if not start breaking new course records.
Well, and there are probably also people who are physically capable, or maybe have the right genetics to perform well at a sport like this, but just aren't crazy enough to do it.
Right. Sure. Yeah. And I think it is, I mean, Hard Rock is a very specific course and race to, it plays to certain people's strengths. I mean, if you're not comfortable in the mountains and you can't handle high altitudes, you're in trouble at Hard Rock. Mm. You have to be able to deal with very, very technical terrain. There's all of those factors play in too. And I don't think there's many people that want to do that.
Let's move on to how running applies to your everyday life, because that is what we do on Mountain Meister. We'll talk about topics in this extreme example and see how, you know, they apply to our everyday lives. So do you push yourself in other parts of your life the way that you push yourself in running? Are you just like naturally a very competitive driven person, or is it just in running?
No, it's absolutely in most areas in my life, I would say. I want to try and give 100% with everything I do. And if I'm not able to do that, it's very hard to accept that.
Hmm.
So, yeah, absolutely. I definitely push myself in other areas.
When you aren't able to push yourself 100%, both in the races and in your everyday life, how do you deal with it? How do you respond to that?
Well, I think it's a learning process. And just as ultra running is, I think it's about, at some point, there's only so much we can do. And especially as a mom and a parent who's trying to work and train and do all these things, you realize, I think, at a certain point that you can't do it all. Mm-hmm. And so kind of accepting that and being okay with that and mm-hmm. being okay that, okay, well, I might not able to do 100% of everything.
What happens to you when you don't run for a while? Do you become
grumpy? Yeah, absolutely. I think it's even just getting out for half an hour or 45 minutes in the morning or at some point during my day, it truly, I can immediately see that it helps. It helps my mood. I'm able to be, I have more patience throughout the day. If I can start my day that way, it's the best scenario. Mm. And when I'm not able to run, I definitely notice it. I feel it.
So you feel better about yourself. Running these distances can't be healthy for you, right? Physically, maybe mentally it can, but it can't be good for your body.
Who says that?
Logic, I think, says that. You can choose not to answer that if you'd like.
You want me to answer whether it's good for the body?
I want to hear your opinion. Is it good for the body?
I mean, I don't know if there's much science. I mean, Western medicine hasn't done much research on this type of an endurance sport. That's the truth. I mean, I think it's just starting to happen. I think there's been some research on the heart, and your heart can become more enlarged. So physically, yeah, that. I mean, I think that obviously it breaks down muscle tissues more so than if you're not running this long of a distance. You know, I have been doing the sport of ultra running for 14 or 15 years now. And you know, yeah, I mean, I feel some things now that I didn't feel before. But I'm not convinced that it's bad for you.
Yeah, it'll be interesting.
At all.
It'll be interesting to see where that goes in the future. I've been told that I have an enlarged heart before, but I think that was emotionally, not a physically enlarged heart. That's pretty stupid.
No, well, and the truth is that I think most athletes have enlarged hearts.
That's a good point. I like that. Do you ever talk to people? I've always wondered this. Do you ever talk to people, I don't know, maybe some people who don't know that you're an ultra marathoner, and they complain about something like an injury, and they're like, yeah, you know, my knee's been aching lately or something. And you're thinking to yourself, yeah, you know, like the other day I was hallucinating at about mile 85 and hadn't slept for 30 hours and lost count of how many times I threw up. Does that ever happen?
I mean, I really look at everything as it's all relative. I mean, I realize that this sport is to the extreme, mm-hmm. and that not everybody understands it, and most people think it's pretty crazy. So everything is just relative to what people do and what people know. So I would never feel that like discounting what their experience is to ultra running, because it's totally on the extreme end.
You're absolutely right about you seeing this as relative, because I was watching a few interviews, and there's one in particular which I'm going to be posting to your Meister profile page on our website. It is just a riot, because the way that you and the person interviewing you are talking about your sport is the way that it's kind of the tone that families use when they're talking about their day at the dinner table, except you're talking about your run. So you're like, yeah, you know, so then I ran into some lightning, which was kind of an issue, and some people were getting hypothermia. It's just so extreme with this very casual tone.
Right, right, yeah.
Very funny.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you've been doing something for long enough, it just sort of seems normal. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, I mean, every now and then you have a reality check and someone comes into your life and it's like, do you realize how crazy this sport is?
Yeah, no, absolutely. It happens to me all the time, not because I'm doing the sport, but because I'm talking to all these people doing this crazy stuff. And
right.
And I forget that, like I said, I'm training for a marathon. I forget that I would have to, on my long runs on the weekend, I'd have to do that long run 10 more times. And my body feels like it's going to collapse on the cement. Yeah. So that's what really humbles me.
Yeah. And I think, too, you know, I mean, even though I've run a lot of 100-milers, I could still tomorrow run a 50K and finish it and think, oh my gosh, I would never want to keep going. So, you know, I just think you put yourself into a mindset when you get to the start line of a race or the day before a race where you're just, you take it piece by piece, which is basically how I see life is, you know, it's just one step at a time, and that's all you can do.
See, now that is really interesting to me, mm-hmm. to hear you say that you feel when you finish a 50K, that you couldn't go any farther, because I mean, mm-hmm. how much does that speak to just situations in general that we face in life and the way that we approach them?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you know, and people will come back and say, I just finished my first 150 miler. I couldn't even fathom continuing to run 100 and, you know, that again. Mm-hmm. And it's, you just, I think that mindset, you know, you can't have that mindset in this type of a thing, because, I mean, that's where the mind really does play in. You just have to, you know, you sort of have to look at it as going from aid station to aid station mm-hmm. in a 100-mile event. You can't think of it as, oh, my God, I'm going to go run 100 miles.
I'm just going to face life, but I need to go aid station to aid station. And
that's
then
right.
I'm going to have to pick up some pacers along the way. Such a great metaphor, huh?
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, if I could apply all the metaphors that I learn in ultra running to my life, it would be great.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
You know, I do try to take that with me.
Mm-hmm. Moving on to something a little bit more tangible. I mentioned your Meister profile page before. This will be going on your Meister profile page, Darcy. We need a gear recommendation mm-hmm. from you.
Well, I think for running, the most important piece of gear is obviously your shoes. So I run in Hokas, and I run in the Hoka Kailua Trail for women. I couldn't do it without these shoes. So that's my gear of choice.
Very great. Yes, we will throw that on your Meister profile page. Now you said there that you couldn't do this without your shoes. We actually did have somebody on the show who runs without shoes.
I think that's crazy.
Have you ever? You think it's crazy? I was going to say, have you ever experimented with the barefoot running?
No, not really. I mean, you know, I mean, I have run around on the field and tried it out, of course, but no, it's I don't train barefoot.
Yeah, yeah. Moving on, I think it's incredible how long this stuff takes. Your long runs mm-hmm. on the weekend are consuming, what, 6 hours of your time?
Sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you have a daughter, like we mentioned before. It's got to be a big challenge to be able to balance all of these things.
It's a big challenge. It's kind of like a juggling act.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Exactly. So mm-hmm. what do you do to juggle these things? Any strategies out there for other people that are juggling things like this?
I think planning ahead is obviously pretty key. Her father is also a huge athlete and is into this stuff, so thankfully he understands this, and so we help each other out, you know. He watches her when I'm racing and vice versa. And obviously finding a good babysitter and having friends that you can do trades with. I think that's really helpful, is, you know, finding people that are also active and saying, hey, I'll watch your kids for a couple hours while you run, and then you can watch mine for a couple hours while I go run.
Did you ever get one of those strollers when
yeah.
was younger?
Yeah, absolutely. I it's worn out now. It's I've used out its warranty. So
you can't get an off-road stroller for the Hard Rock, right?
No, definitely not. Okay. No. But the Bob strollers were probably my gear of choice when she was a baby.
Oh, great. We can I'll throw that on your Meister profile page too for us.
Yeah.
Check that out. Great. Okay. Yeah. So to close, Darcy, you inspire a lot of people. People like you inspire me when I am doing these long runs. And honestly, sometimes when I finish them, I throw my hands up in the air and everybody in Boston looks at me like, what are you doing? Who is this weirdo? But you inspire me to keep going, and I feel accomplished afterward. If you're inspiring me, is there any athlete out there or type of athlete or person that is inspiring you?
I've thought about that, and I think it's really, it's just other friends and athletes that are out there doing this stuff. And I mean, I guess an example is, you know, I've been watching Megan Hicks, Brian Powell's partner, do the Tour de Géants, and you know, watching friends who are going out there and doing, you know, even longer, you know, 200-mile runs and whatnot, and seeing them persevere through that kind of a thing. And even though you know they're suffering and they're having a hard time, just watching people persevere and you know, seeing photos of beautiful places and running in beautiful places, those are the things that really inspire me.
Thank you so much for joining me today, Darcy. It has been a lovely conversation. For our listeners, you can find out more about today's episode on our website, mtnmeister.com. Check out Darcy's Meister profile page. If you're looking to get into some ultra running, there are a lot of great resources out there. I'll have those posted to Darcy's page as well. So, Darcy, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
I don't know about you guys, but I am fired up and I need to go running right now. Darcy just got me really excited to do so. I think I'm just going to put on my shoes and go outside. But first, I need to tell you one more thing. I am so excited to announce that the podcast app is now native on your iPhone, which means that it can't be deleted. It's like one of those other apps like Weather or Calendar or Photos, which I think by transitive property means that Mountain Meister is just as important as those. Enjoy doing whatever you were doing while listening to this podcast. I'm about to go running. Until next time, this is Mountain Meister, and I am your host, Ben Schenk.